You're listening to Son of a Witch Podcast with Mike D, the podcast about witchy, paranormal, geeky, pagan, comic, pop culture awesomeness. Available anywhere podcasts are heard.
Welcome, everybody. This is your lovely host, Monty, and you are listening to a fresh segment of the two-part Samhain Halloween extravaganza. I have with me a very good friend, almost like a brother, and he's also my cousin, Shane. Say hello, Shane.
Hi. When you introduced me as a friend, I was like, are you not going to say I'm family? I was going to be offended, but thanks for throwing the cousin in there, because it is true. We are cousins. Glad to be here today, my man.
We are cousins, and I'm glad to have you. Shane's a few years older than I am, and we grew up together, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but we spent a lot of summers on the lake finding arrowheads. He's an expert at that, and as a matter of fact, you always made me look really bad. You always found them, and I never could, you bastard.
I know. Did you ever find one? I'm not sure.
Oh, you're being a smartass now. I actually did find a couple. But yeah, Shane is coming on. Like I said, we have always been very close, and we share a lot of similar taste, comic books being one, which we'll get into here in just a bit. Kind of the comic guru as far as people that I know. Actually, I think you're kind of what got me into comics, going to the store with grandma and picking them up at Patton's drugstore.
You remember? Oh, yeah. Patton's probably, I'd say 25% of my collection is probably bought at Patton's drugstore in Woodruff, South Carolina. That's accurate.
And if the people that ran that then knew what those are probably worth now, they probably should have bricked. So,
yeah,
we're going to have a lot of stuff. We've got some cool stories. We can talk about the convention and Stan here in a little bit, too. But the reason that I brought Shane on is, as I said, we do share a lot of similar interests. And Shane knows an awful lot about Japanese culture. And do you want to tell us why?
Well, I have been married nearly 20 years to my wife, Megumi, who is from Japan, from Shizuoka Prefecture, a little south of Tokyo, which is where Mount Fuji is. And because of that, I've spent a lot of time in Japan. I lived there for a year and taught English in middle school. And I have visited probably about, other than that year I lived there, about 15 to 16 summers. So a lot of time in the summer spent in Japan, which we'll get into in a minute, is a good time to hear a good ghost story.
Ah, nice. Well, we're all about the ghost stories on this episode. Now, first of all, he mentioned Mount Fuji. This SOB will go to Japan every summer and, like, literally almost, I think it is from the backyard, isn't it? Like, you can see Mount Fuji.
The bedroom window, my bedroom window, on a clear day. Yeah, you can just look out and see Mount Fuji. Summer is the worst time to see it because there's a lot of clouds. So winter is the best time, and it's not snow-capped in the summer, obviously. But I have been up it a few times, not to the top. It's on my bucket list, but been up about halfway. And it's just a gorgeous thing to look at, with the river right there, and kind of my home away from home is when I can look out a window and see the river in Mount Fuji. Lovely.
Yeah, I get very jealous every time he's visiting. I'm happy for him because they don't get to see that side of the family except normally when they go over. But
you're coming one summer though, right?
I know. That's what I was going to say. That's a bucket list thing. I'm definitely going to do that. I was hoping to try and make it work, and I was actually even saving up for it to try and make it over, even if I just had to stand outside for the Olympics. And then that bastard COVID hit us. And, you know, that kind of shut that all down. So that kind of sucks.
Not, I'm still not over that. Still not over that.
Dude, that would have been.
I was there this past summer. You know, we were heading for the Olympics. And
And some of the pictures you showed were crazy, like in the airports and stuff. I mean, you literally had like the entire, what was that, Tokyo airport?
Yeah, I was there by myself, basically.
I mean, he's showing me pictures of like these long running platforms that you stand on and all this other stuff and not a soul in sight. He's
flew over there on a Dreamliner with about 7 or 8 people on it, you know, a Boeing Dreamliner. So, I only got a chance to go into Japan this summer because my wife is a citizen, and they still were very reluctant to let me in. They had to give me the COVID test, obviously, but I was about an hour in immigration with them trying to parse out what I was doing there and why I was trying to enter their country. They eventually let me in, but reluctantly. But it was a great summer.
Yeah, it looked like it. And they typically will go to the, what do you call it, the electronic district, Nintendo stuff and Pokemon stuff is?
Akihabara, where all the geeks go. So, of course, my boys like that, for sure. All of Tokyo is just any district you can find that kind of stuff. It's just the coolest, most technologically advanced city that you'll ever visit in the world. So it's you mentioned bucket list. You got to do it, my friend. You will love it.
Oh, I'm going to. And I'm going to bring Taylor with me. Those of you listening, that Taylor is my son. He just graduated high school and is 18 now. But he grew up with his dad being a comic book geek and loving movies and sci-fi and video games. I'm very proud to say that he prefers retro video games to the newer stuff. I raised him right. But yeah, he was always very jealous. But you guys would always bring him some really cool Pokemon stuff back, which was super cool. And yeah, I'm jealous every time I see the pictures. And I'll be honest with you, this is going to sound hilarious, but one of the reasons, and I was telling Tina about this recently, one of the reasons that I really want to go to Japan, aside from all the things we've just said, is they have the most insanely fucking cool toilets I've ever seen in my life. You know, with a complete control panel and heated seats and, you know, talcum powder when you're done. And yeah,
let me tell you about this. My mother-in-law is very cold natured. And I mentioned I go there in the summer. So you can imagine the middle of July, it's just as humid there as it is in South Carolina. They don't have central heating and air in their houses. So they have units in every room. So when you go into a room, you turn the air on. When you leave the room, you turn the air off. So the bathrooms are not air conditioned. So you can imagine when you're going to spend some time in the restroom and you sit down on that seat and she's got the heated seats on in the middle of July. Oh my gosh, it's miserable. It's like going to the bathroom in a truck stop.
I thought those were just like mainly in like restaurants and public places.
No, they're in the houses, my friend. No, we've got the bidet, you know, so that's the nice part, you know. You get some good cleaning going on there, but I have to beg her to turn the heated seats off because it's all in Japanese and I don't know how to do it. So I don't know how to turn the things off, but
you don't want sweaty cheeks when you're getting up off the toilet. That's no fun. So
miserable, miserable.
I guess I'll stop chewing the fat. Also having a beverage, guys, an alcoholic beverage. So if you're listening to this, grab your cup of tea, grab your gin and tonic, grab your beer, whatever you want. Because as this segment goes further in, we may get a little crazier. And just FYI, Shane, go ahead and why don't you tell us a little bit, aside from what you've already told us, about maybe some of the Japanese lore, you know, any type of ghost stories.
Sure, I got some stuff to share with you. So I mentioned that majority of the time I visit Japan is in the summer. Japanese people have very interesting ways to cool down. You know, I also said that they don't have central heating and air. So they even sell like special little wind chimes and little bells in the summer that they hang out in their windows. And the tinkling sound of these wind chimes are, they say that they cool people down just hearing them because they associate it with being cool. So another thing that cools people down in the summer is telling ghost stories, because when you get shivers, you get the goosebumps, right? It kind of cools you down. You feel cold. So they literally like to tell ghost stories in the summer because it can cool you down. What I love to do is watch Japanese television, and there's always specials about ghosts in the summer. So if I see that on, I'm glued to the television. And they love photos of of ghosts. You know, you've seen photos where you can see like orbs of light and things like that, or shadowy figures. Well, I think they cornered the market on that. There are more probably per capita ghost photos in Japan than probably anywhere else in the world, because they're all over the TV over there in the summer.
And that's saying a lot, because you live in a very haunted city, my hometown.
Yeah, Charleston. Yeah, Charleston is nearby here. And yeah, there's a lot of ghost stories down here as well. Let me explain something to you and your listeners, Mike. There's two kinds of really ghosts and demons or monsters in Japan. And it's good to kind of know the difference. So yurei or obake are what they call ghost. All right. But most people associate Japanese folklore and tales with those yokai, which means demons or monsters. I'm going to tell a little bit more about the ghost, but there are some pretty cool monsters or demons that, if you don't mind me mentioning it, it's pretty interesting, I think.
Knock yourself out.
So there's one that's called Akaname, and this is one of the demons, one of the yokai. The traditional Japanese bath is, you know, separate from the toilet. We were already talking about toilets earlier, so I'll segue into that. But, you know, it's a room where, you know, there's a shower, there's a bathtub, and what you generally do is cleanse yourself before you soak in the tub. And then the water, you leave it for the next person. So everybody kind of shares the same bath water. I know it sounds gross, but it's kind of like going to an onsen or hot springs, because if you clean your body really well, then the water in the bath shouldn't be too dirty.
Exactly.
This demon, he comes in at night and sneaks in, and he likes to eat the soap scum and the bacteria that grows in the bathroom.
What?
And licks it up. He has this long tongue. So people are scared to take baths at night because of the Akaname.
Wow. Akaname. Soap scum liquor.
That's exactly what it translates to, Mike. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So another one that I used to scare my boys with was the Namahage. If the kids are being bad, he steals bad children. So if they're not listening to you, and when they were really younger, especially when we lived in Japan that year, we would just say, the Namahage, I think I hear Namahage outside coming to get you. And they would immediately stop doing what they weren't supposed to be doing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Beautiful and torturous at the same time.
Right. But I think we're here to talk about ghosts, right? So here's what, Mike, you've seen The Ring, right? You've seen the horror movie, the Japanese movie, The Ring.
To me, the fuck out, yes.
Right. Yeah, the woman coming out of the TV, the video cassette, that kind of thing. Oh, my gosh, the long hair.
The way she walked was just, it was creepy.
Yeah. Of course, my wife made me watch that by myself because she does not like scary movies. But that was one that was not good to watch by yourself.
I've never watched it again, if that tells you anything.
Yeah. I think her name was Sadako, the character, that ghost. I could be wrong there. But that is based on an actual true story or of a woman.
Please don't tell me that.
Yeah. It is. I'm sorry to say. Her name is Oiwa, and she's kind of the archetype for the Japanese female ghost, because if anything about ghosts in Japan, they're mostly female because they just are just very scary, especially when they have that long stringy hair and the messed up face like the woman in The Ring. So Oiwa was the basis for this ghost story. That was actually originally a novel in Japan, and then they made it into that very creepy movie that we're talking about here. But it was from the 1600s. This woman lived, and she was married to a samurai who was disgraced, and he owed a lot of money, was kind of a good-for-nothing guy. Her father, they got into an argument over him not having any money or, you know, being bad with his finances. And the husband killed her father and told Oiwa that a robber did it. So blamed it on somebody else.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so then, but they went on, they moved on, and she got pregnant. But of course, like bad samurais do, he fell in love with another woman. And that woman was very jealous. So at the baby shower, the new girlfriend of the husband sent Oiwa a gift, face cream, but she poisoned it.
Oh, no.
And when Oiwa used the face cream, then it made her skin slough off. It messed up her face, made it disfigured, and also made her hair fall out in clumps. You can kind of imagine that woman from The Ring, you know, kind of looking like that. So, of course, very Japanese, Oiwa committed suicide. She couldn't live like that. So she killed herself. But she vowed that she was going to haunt and get revenge on her good-for-nothing husband. And he had one more thing he wanted to do. He took her corpse, her dead body, and nailed it to a door and threw it in the river. And that comes back up later in the story.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. I would say it's pretty intense. So the husband married this new girlfriend. And on their wedding night, of course, then that's Oiwa's opening to come in and haunt them. She was kind of showing up everywhere in their room. Her face was everywhere. And the husband was striking out with his sword at her. And it ends up killing his new wife. That's what happens in these stories, right?
Wow.
So he just could not for the rest of his life avoid seeing her face everywhere. Even in the lanterns at night, he would see her face. The thing about the door, he went fishing in the river. And what does he catch?
Caught the door? The same door.
With her rotting corpse on it. So she just is doing nothing but just haunting him. And of course, then now he can't live with himself anymore. So very Japanese. Suicide is a popular means of death in Japan and Japanese folklore. He tries to kill himself. Well, she won't let him do that. Every time he got that sword out, she would stay his hand. And so she just continued to haunt him for the rest of his life and would not allow him to kill himself.
Man, and that's got to cause some insanity in and of itself.
Right.
Aside from even seeing your dead wife that you did wrong. Oh, man, it's got chills.
Yeah, man. Good stuff. But if I can recommend a book for your listeners, got it in Japan, but they do now have it on Amazon in America. So it's called Yurei Attack. Yurei is the word for ghost. Y-U-R-E-I, the Japanese Ghost Survival Guide. And it's by a husband and wife team. The husband is American. His name is Matt Alt. And his wife is named Hiroko Yoda. Yes, Yoda, Star Wars Yoda. And they have really cool manga-like illustrations. And they go through just a lot of different ghost stories in Japan. And they have a companion volume of that called Yokai Attack, which is about the demons and the monsters. So highly recommend
that
stuff. Yeah.
I'm definitely going to pick that up because now correct me if I'm wrong. So now, if I'm not mistaken, there's a manga series related to Yurei.
There's lots. I know the one you're probably thinking about. It's a really popular one. And it starts with the G, and it's just right on the tip of my tongue right now. But it's got a lot of yokai as well. And there was a video game lately, Yokai Watch, that I think made it over here to the States.
I have heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, really popular in Japan with kids in the last few years. Lots of good anime and manga. My son's into one called Demon Slayer right now, which is very much like they kill vampires, but it's, you know, lots of different types of vampires that you wouldn't expect to see in some of the lore we have. So Japan just has just a rich culture, and they just love things that go bump in the night and things that are strange and odd, which makes me love them even more, right? Because
we were kind of raised around we heard ghost stories all our lives, I can see that, and it's very interesting to me too. And that's one of the things is in addition to, you know, a lot of the temples and things like that, because I incorporate some Buddhist tenets into some of my practice. But yeah, I definitely want to see that. A question for you. I don't know if you've ever been there, but in the vein of ghost stories and the fact that suicide is very prevalent in Japanese culture, have you ever been to the forest?
The forest of trees.
Yes.
Yes. I have not. It's near Mount Fuji. There's five lakes called the Fuji Five Lakes that every summer, it seems like I want to go check these lakes out and see the forest, and it's the suicide forest. My wife is... She's okay with me going to see the lakes, but she's not a big fan of ghosts. I mean, I think that a lot of Japanese people have a very healthy
respect
for the undead or for the dead.
Yeah.
And they tend to want to stay away from it. So I may have to branch out on my own, because near where my wife grew up, there is a old tunnel that the road from Kyoto to Tokyo, the two capitals. And now they've built a road around it, so they don't need this tunnel anymore. So it's just kind of a one you can drive through or walk through. It's called the Magi Tunnel. And there's just a lot of ghost stories associated with that. I did talk my wife into letting me walk through it one day, and she kind of followed me in the car. But when I've tried to make subsequent trips there, she will not go back, because we found out from a friend of hers who walked through it at night with a couple friends of his that...
That's brave.
Yeah, that's brave. I mean, I was doing it in the daytime because she wouldn't take me at night. No, that wasn't going to happen, Mike. But they were walking through at night, and they heard this kind of just squeaky sound, and they didn't know what was going on. And they looked to their left, and they could see a bicycle passing them. And there was a woman riding the bicycle, and she was wearing traditional Japanese garb, old kimono style from probably the 1800s. and she was not a real person. Riding this bike through the tunnel. So they hightailed it out of there. And once she heard that story, then I never got another chance to go back to that tunnel.
Well, I tell you what, we'll make a deal. You tell Megumi that if by the time I make it over, because I definitely want to go when you guys are there, obviously. But if by the time I make it over, you've not been to the forest or anything like that, she's just going to have to let us protect each other and let us go. Because that's as morbid as it sounds, that is on my bucket list.
No, I would really like to see that as well. But you're not supposed to go walking too far into it because you apparently lose track of where you are. Compasses don't work, any of that stuff. So, yeah.
Well, I have heard that because it's been an interest of mine off and on. And again, I know that sounds morbid. Again, I have kind of a healthy respect for spirits and the dead and things like that as well. And that's why. But I have heard that when people go there to commit suicide, that they will take a rope or string or something with them in case they change their mind when they get to where they end up and they can find their way back. Have you ever heard that?
I have not heard that, but that's pretty smart. It's kind of the Hansel and Gretel effect, I guess, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I had read, and I don't know how accurate it is. It was a Japanese person that wrote this article, but apparently people go in there and a lot of times they're still unsure if they're going to actually go through with everything. And so they'll take this yarn or rope or whatever, and they'll normally either find, you know, a body, which I think, if I remember correctly, a lot of the way they go about this is hanging themselves, but they will find like either a body at the end of this rope, or they'll find the rope there and nothing, meaning that someone kind of changed their mind and came back. But yeah, it's very interesting. And I'm sure I have heard the thing about the compasses and getting lost. And I've also heard that when you walk through that forest, you can't hear anything. You don't hear any type of life, insects, you know, wildlife, anything. And that's something I've been interested to see if that's accurate as well.
Let me entice you even more. It's probably about an hour away from her hometown, so it's not even.
And I thought, I knew it was close to Mount Fuji, and I knew that her family's home was near there. I didn't know how close, but I knew you could see it from there. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, if Shane's never been, then we're definitely going when I go over, because if it's that close, then I have to check it out. And you know, well, you may not, but my mom's side of the family, her brother, who's now deceased, but they all have always been very into ghosts, possibly even more so than grandma and your mom and Kathy were. Kathy's our aunt. They actually for a long time had all the equipment, and they would go to different places that were supposedly haunted and do EVPs and photography and all this stuff. So but they actually had kind of like TAPS, the ghost hunters. They had their own name and organization, and they'd get access to some of these historic homes around South Carolina. One time they actually went to the old jail in Charleston, which I've also been through several times.
I've been there as well. Yes.
Lavinia Fisher.
Correct.
Yeah. There's a ghost story associated with that. Now I'll kind of tell that in a second, but one thing kind of segueing from that part of ghost stories and lore. In Charleston, South Carolina, there are a lot, because Charleston's a very old and historic city. And as such, it now floods all the time, as you and I were talking about recently, because it was built so long ago. But a lot of old historic homes and a lot of atrocities and tragedies sadly happened there as well. And Lavinia Fisher, and I think I'm remembering this correctly, but Lavinia Fisher was her and her husband, I think it was, had a home. And back then, you know, there weren't a lot of places in between each locale, you know, homes were spread out. And so,
yeah, they ran a little roadside inn.
Exactly.
Like a traveler's inn.
And the story goes, basically what would happen, from what I've heard, different variations, is that they had kind of this roadside inn and travelers would stop there, you know. And from what I recall, Lavinia Fisher was apparently a very beautiful woman. And sometimes she would kind of seduce, but kind of entice and flirt and things like that with these male travelers. And ultimately, I think it got around that a lot of people were going missing and dying after they had last been known at this roadside inn. And so Lavinia was was picked up and thrown in the old Charleston jail, which still stands now. They do a lot of, and I know this because Tina's niece is a blacksmith, and she went to a school in Charleston for such, still lives there. At one point, until they built in one of the old horse carriage stables their new location, they were based out of the old jail. And so as such, she had access to the alarm codes and things like that. So I got a couple of times to go through there without, you know, a tour. I've done tours too, but then you've got everybody with you and everything else. But one time we went there at night. I'll have to send you some pictures. I actually caught some orbs and what seemed to be, when we didn't see anything, you know, like mist and things like that in there. Heard some spooky noises, but you know, since you've been through there, that the old jail.
Yeah, I'd love to see the pictures. I didn't see anything, but my youngest son and I went, and you know, they take you from room to room on the tours, and the rooms are always pitch black, almost always. And
oh yeah,
we went in. We were the first two in this first room, and these other two women that were on the tour came in right behind us. And before anybody else came into the room, we just heard this really, almost like a scream, you know, and it just kind of like, we kind of, the four of us looked at each other like, did you just hear that? You know? Yeah, it's a place that you definitely know there's some souls there that are not very happy what happened to them there.
No, they're not. And they explain this, as you know, on the tours, that and the first room they took us to was this very small room. I mean, this building is like all stone and hardly any wood to it, except the floors and beams and rafters and such. And the first room they took us to was where they would hold these people they had picked up and arrested. And this room was tiny, but they would fill it so full that it was almost standing room only. They were going to the restroom in there. They weren't being fed properly, and they couldn't sleep well because it was so packed. And so, yeah, there's a lot of agony there. They weren't very nice to the people that were housed there, according to lore and history. And they had picked Lavinia up. And of course, she went there, and they used to do hangings out in front of the jail, and they were getting ready to hang her. And I can't remember her exact words. Maybe you do. I don't know. But more or less, to sum it up, right before they, you know, dropped her, they gave her her last words. And she vowed that she would, you know, seek revenge and haunt, you know, the people that had done this to her and such. And it's said that she still does haunt. And it's very cool. We actually got to go into a couple of the lower rooms that they don't do on the tours. And we heard some noises as well, similar to what you did. Not a scream, but it almost sounded like, and you've seen the doors in there. They're like huge, thick, heavy doors. And a lot of them are iron bar doors and things. And you could hear the iron bar door that we could see was standing open. It was almost as though it was being very slowly closed, like a, you know, kind of squeaky, unoiled hinges sort of sound. And the entire group kind of looked at each other and questioning who did that, you know, somebody's messing with it, but no such luck. So that is one of the ghost stories from there. And then also that same trip, we went around Charleston, and I'm a huge Edgar Allan Poe fan, and it's
through that, yes sir.
Yeah, and it's said that, you know, you've heard, I'm sure, that he stayed around that area at one time. The Gold Bug is actually,
yeah, he was stationed at Fort Moultrie on Sullivan's Island, and that's where he wrote the Gold Bug, the pirate treasure story. Yes,
exactly.
And may have fallen in love with the Charleston Beauty, and that may be who he based Annabelle Lee, the famous poem.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah, I never knew you were a fellow Poe fan, but
well, there's a great the Dock Street Theater down here has a theater company. They have a great play called Nevermore about Edgar Allan Poe in Charleston that I saw once, that they sometimes every October bring it back.
Oh my gosh.
I think they're doing, you know, the theaters aren't open right now down here, but I think, Mike, you can pay, go online and pay. I think they have an online version of it right now. So highly, highly recommended. Great stuff.
Oh yeah. Dock Street Theater has always been, they've always put out really good. I've gone to a lot of performances there.
And it's haunted as well.
It is. Yes, it is. Yeah. I vaguely remember some of them.
John Wilkes Booth's father was also an actor, and he haunts the theater.
people see him walking around.
Now, see, I'd never heard that.
Yep.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah. And you do, like, when you walk in there, you can sense, well, in Charleston, anywhere, you can feel the history all around you. I'm a firm believer that a lot of ghosts and spirits that people encounter are stuck and reliving kind of the moment of their death, or, you know, a certain moment in their life, and they're just kind of trapped and haven't moved on. And you can almost sense that, even if you don't believe it. There's a, I don't know, there's just a feel that Charleston has that is really cool. But we walked around and I took some other pictures. There was one building, I can't remember which one it was, and you could almost see this blue kind of fog. Even she, who did not believe in ghosts and things like that at all, really, reluctantly went with me. And after that trip, you know, I think it kind of changed her mind with some of the photography and things that we saw. And then also, I think it's the customs house where the dungeon is, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
The customs house where they would bring people through as they came off of the ships and everything else. They would house a lot of pirates, or, you know, people that had stowed away, or, you know, stolen, thieves, things like that, in this little dungeon area below the customs house. And when I say little, it's pretty cramped, I would say. And you can take tours. If you do a ghost tour there, they'll normally take you through it. But down in there, I don't know if you've ever been, but they have these.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So you know what I'm talking about. They have these huge iron chain blocking off. They're like some of the original chains, but they're blocking off certain areas so you can't mess with, you know, the historic stuff. And while we were down there, I mean, I actually grabbed one of the chains just to kind of feel the weight of it in my hand. And they're heavy. I mean, when I say huge iron chains, picture way back when, you know, they're very heavy. And these chains, there's no wind down there. There's no drafts because there's a few windows, but not very big. And they have them kind of closed off. And even if there was a draft, I don't see one being, unless it's like a hurricane coming through, being strong enough to move these chains. But these chains just started rocking back and forth. Wow. As we were walking through this. And I actually, at one point, I looked at the tour guide and I was like, look, I want to try something. And I grabbed one of the chains and stopped it and made sure it wasn't moving and let go. And it immediately, even faster than before, started kind of swinging back and forth. So lots of ghostly type things in Charleston, which I think led to my love of the supernatural and the occult and things like that growing up around
that.
Yeah,
so when the pandemic is over, everyone, you need to come visit Charleston and take some ghost tours, because you will have a great time.
You definitely do. I have another cousin on my mom's side of the family that lives down there, and now she does weddings, elopements, as she calls them, small weddings, and she's a wedding planner. But she was a concierge at the Battery Carriage House Inn for many, many years. And
I think that place is haunted as well.
Oh, she showed me, yeah, like, from guests that have stayed there, literally, I mean, it was a stack of accounts, maybe like 6 to 8 inches high. And these are just regular sheets of paper that people had written in.
I think one of the rooms is like haunted by a little boy, which just kid ghosts creep me out. So keep me away from there for no.
That, and not, then not, there's like a torso of an old Civil War soldier that supposedly haunts one of the bedrooms in there. And I tried for years when I was with my ex-wife, my son's mom, when we would go down there, because my cousin worked there. She could get me a little bit of a break on the price. And I was like, let's just go stay there. And she never would, because she knew without a doubt that I was going to want to stay in one of those rooms. So I never actually got to stay there, but I got many tours through the place. And yeah, it's very spooky as well. But she turned me on to a really good tour company called Bulldog Tours.
Yes, that's who does the Old City Jail tours now. Yes,
exactly. And that's who I went through. And I've been with them several times. And their tour guides are very knowledgeable and very fun, too. I equate it, now that I've been to Salem, Massachusetts, very similar to that. They get dressed up sometimes and, you know, spooky garb, and, you know, walk around with candle lanterns and things like that. So, yeah, when the pandemic's over, not now, they're closed now. Don't go now. but when things lift up, yeah, you definitely need to visit there. So kind of segueing into that, and I know you briefly mentioned it right before we got on this call, and I had never heard about it, which was very interesting to me because I have, because of you, I guess by association, I have read a lot about Japanese culture and lore and things like that. I've never heard this, but you said that the Japanese have their own way of doing seances.
Right, right. In the 1800s, when seances were the very in Victorian thing to do in the parlor, you know, the table knocking, the table turning. It also moved over to Japan because Japan was open to the West in the mid-1800s. America kind of forced open trade with Japan, and then it just kind of flooded the gates there. But one of the things that got to the shores of Japan was seances, but they found their own way of doing it, and they use a piece of paper, and they draw a torii gate, which is the red wooden gates that you see at the entrances of shrines. So that symbol in Japanese kanji at the top. And then they write the Japanese word for yes and no, hai and ie, on the paper. So it's very similar to kind of a Ouija board, Mike. Mm-hmm. And it's called Kokuri-san, which Kokuri, there's symbols for the animals fox, dog, and tanuki. And I bet you don't know what a tanuki is, do you?
You know, I've heard it. I think Taylor's mentioned it before, but I don't know.
Japanese raccoon. So those are animals that are believed to possess supernatural power. So I guess that's where the name came from. So what you would do is you take a 10-yen coin, which is a kind of a 10-cent type piece, and put it on the torii gate symbol. And then whoever you've got, the two people, three people, everybody puts a finger on the coin and then ask if there's any spirits in the room that want to make contact. And if the coin, if there are, then the coin will move to the yes word. And then you can ask yes, no questions to the spirits. And when you're done, you got to shred that paper and throw it away. Don't just throw it away. You got to shred it. You got to destroy it totally. And then you need to also spin the coin that day, or the bad luck's going to stay with you, or the spirits will stay with you. So you got to spin that coin. And then, of course, very Japanese. They're very hospitable people, very nice people. So they end the session telling the spirits, thank you. Could you please return now?
Oh,
that's
wow.
How they do seances in Japan.
That is so interesting, dude. I have never in my life heard that. And what I'm going to ask, because I post on the show's Instagram page and the show and everything else, a lot of the things that I talk about so people can kind of see it for themselves. But if you could send me a link, pictures or whatever of that, and if you have one of those 10-cent, mail me one. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I got one right here. I think we need to try this ourselves the next time we're together. And if we're together in Japan.
Oh, man, that would be even better.
Try it there. Yeah.
I don't think I want to try it in the forest. Yeah, definitely.
No. You wouldn't catch me doing that either.
But yeah, if you could send me some links, I'll post those pictures or whatever. I'll post those up so you guys can see what we're talking about. I have a, high priestess friend of mine from the Cabot tradition. And if you don't know the Cabot tradition, Lori Cabot is the official witch of Salem. Governor Dukak, back when he was the Massachusetts governor, gave her that title because she's helped a lot with local police and missing persons cases and murder cases. And she's very psychic and has actually, when they were at a loss, helped them solve a lot of these cases. So he gave her this title. And she even, there's a very cool story about her. I'm actually taking classes from her starting next year to be a Cabot witch. And but this really cool story about her, and if you YouTube it, you can find it. You'd probably YouTube like Lori Cabot National Geographic 1979. But back in 1979, Nat Geo decided that they were going to do a huge spread. Pretty much the whole was devoted to witchcraft because it was on the rise. It was becoming not mainstream, but more known about. And they sought her out. Nat Geo, because she was well known, they asked if they could come out and do a photo shoot and them do a circle, which is a ritual that covens will do. And she graciously agreed because the thing I like about Lori Cabot and her tradition is that she bases it off of from a scientific perspective.
I'm learning something new every week.
But yeah, so they came out and she approaches it from a very scientific perspective. Witchcraft basically is just anything in nature, anything in life has an energy. Even inanimate objects have a type of energy. And I had somebody try to question me on that one time. And she said, no, that's not true. If you can't see it, it's not there. And I'm like, but you believe in ghosts. And she's like, yeah, but you can see those. And I said, okay, you can't see radiation, but if you're around it, your ass is going to be glowing for a while. So that right there is proof positive.
For a while, and then you're dead.
Yeah, exactly. So that's proof positive that there are energies, and just learning how to tap into those energies and not manipulate them, but sort of bend them to kind of affect positive changes in your life and others and things like that. So they came out. And she's very big on getting the, you know, old school version, green face, long warty noses, you know, witches worship Satan and eat children and all this stuff. She's real big on trying to.
You mean that stuff's not true?
Well, you know, if the child looks tasty enough.
Right.
Yeah. So she's real big on trying to stamp that out. And Salem luckily has embraced its history, as tragic as it was, and as kind of even the judge, people think it's Judge Hawthorne. It's actually Judge Haythorne. Nathaniel Hawthorne, the author, actually added the W to try and differentiate himself.
See, this is why I listen to this podcast. I learn stuff like that. Read the Scarlet Letter in school, and you don't know that. You don't learn that kind of stuff.
No. And it's not a very commonly known thing outside of the community that I'm in. A lot of those witches, a lot of people don't know. The site where most of the stuff happened is actually a little outside of the town of Salem itself. But there is a memorial cemetery there. And there is a very cool, you can walk into this area, and it's kind of a U shape around these old massive trees that have been there forever. And as you're walking in on the stones before you enter this little memorial garden area, there are etched last words these people were shouting as they were being killed. And that alone is chilling, but they have what looks like these stone slabs coming out from the stone walls, almost looks like benches, but they're memorials for each of the witches that history says were murdered. And people will leave flowers, people will leave things, candy, all sorts of things. And that made me think of Japanese culture a little bit when I was doing that, because they're very similar to that. Again, honoring the dead and remembering the ancestors and such. And complete strangers will come through and just coins and all manner of things. So I took some pictures. I'll send them to you. But
hey, the Salem stuff, it reminds me, have you seen the movie The Witch? Is it an independent movie that came out maybe 5-6 years ago?
I don't think I have, actually. I don't know that I've even heard of it.
Oh, my gosh. Simply called The Witch, and it's about a family, I believe, in pre-colonial times up in your part of your neck of the woods up there, pre-Revolutionary War, and this family, for unknown reasons at the time, is sent to go live out, you know, they have to move from where they're living out by themselves out in the forest, and they have a couple girls, I believe, and, well, it just goes from there. So you definitely need to watch that. You would love it.
I will probably watch that tonight, because that immediately caught my attention.
Oh,
and
my
I
gosh.
Love indie movies anyway. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
He made a movie. He's made two movies. The second movie came out this year with Robert Pattinson and Daniel Defoe, The Lighthouse, that got a little bit of play. I haven't seen that one yet, but The Witch, excellent.
Now, I have heard of The Lighthouse. I didn't know the director's name, but I knew Defoe and Pattinson were in it. Not a huge fan of Robert Pattinson. I can't believe that they're putting him in as Batman anyway, but we'll talk about that in a second. But
jury's out on that one. Yeah.
But yeah, when you walk through this memorial, you'll see all these things, especially around Halloween. This year, not as much, but normally Halloween in Salem is almost like a mini Mardi Gras. The Cabots have a huge ball where you go and dress up and things like that. And they have huge parades and all this stuff. And the town just gets flooded. And that's really how they keep alive. They're a big tourist town as it is. But yeah, if you ever go to Salem, definitely check that out. It's a very cool place. But Salem in and of itself is like a real life Diagon Alley. It's for a witch, it's really like the pinnacle. I mean, you go through Salem and there's these herb shops that have herbs, and not just magical herbs, but any kind of herb. And I mean, like wall to wall, ceiling to floor, massive jars of all these herbs that, and I'm huge into herbs and plants. I've never even heard of some of them. Stores that, shops that make and sell wands. There's one that a lot of the kids call the Harry Potter wand shop. It's not called that, but they sell wands similar to what you would see in Harry Potter. But then there are also Laurie Cabot's daughter, Penny, actually makes a lot of magical wands and things for use in witchcraft. And so you've got wand shops, you've got shops that make brooms, which brooms, even though we don't fly on them, and even though we never did brooms.
Wait a minute, you don't fly on brooms, Mike?
You know, I'm going to tell you why why I think, and a lot of us think, I sadly can't fly.
I'm just joking, everyone. I'm really just joking.
No, I joke like that too. It's fine, but yeah, the lore behind that and why they think that was ever done is one, anybody who was perceived to be a witch back then, which a lot of these people were just handy and crafty with herbs and knew how to use them. A lot of herbal remedies and what we would call old wives' tales or folklore and things like that. And because of that, because they were healers and things like that, they got demonized more or less. And that was one of the things, because in certain rituals back then, because brooms do play a part in the history, it was said that, you know, at certain rituals for certain Sabbaths, you know, you would dance around and have fun and just enjoy yourself. And so they would have these brooms and they'd be hopping up and down and dancing and everything. And that was part of it. But there's also what is called a flying ointment, which you can actually still make. And by flying, what it meant and still does is it helps you kind of access the astral realm, astral travel, out of body type experiences and things like that.
Now you're talking Dr. Strange.
Exactly. So this ointment was a lot of times, because it was absorbed, they thought, quicker and easier through the genitalia area, they would kind of rub this ointment on a broomstick, and that was how they applied it, if you can kind of get where I'm going with that. And now, again, I don't know that to be fact, but that is some of the lore that I've read as to why they think witches flew. But yeah, there's broom shops, there's stores that sell all manner of pendulums, which I do pendulum readings and divination that way. Just everything you could ever want as a witch. And even if you're not, it's still a very cool town, much like Charleston. And Charleston actually has a lot of hoodoo, and Shane will know this term, but many of you may not, Geechee culture, which is folklore and superstition and religion of a lot of the slaves that were
from the West African cultures. Yes.
Exactly. That they were brought in. And for those that don't know, in Charleston, again, I equate this to kind of Salem, and that they've turned horrible into something somewhat positive. But as these slaves were brought in on these ships, they would be auctioned off at the slave market. And the market now is this huge open air market with all manner of people selling all sorts of crafty things and foods and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. But it is originally where these slaves were done. And if you ever go and you see, you know, any African-American peoples making or weaving these sawgrass baskets and things like that, don't take their picture. Don't like that.
No, they don't. No.
In that culture, taking their picture is almost equal to stealing their soul, and they don't like that at all. So, but yeah, it's really cool how some places can kind of turn a negative thing into a positive and try to salvage some of that history a little bit. But yeah, so as far as that goes, I mean, we've gotten pretty into the ghost part of it, about some Japanese seances. Now, I have been, and Shane knows this too because he listens, but I have been teasing that we were going to talk about our experiences with our grandma, who did seances quite a bit years ago. in her later years, and she's still alive now. She is in, as my listeners know, in hospice. And in her later years, she didn't really do these types of things and didn't really even talk about it much. But yeah, back in the day, I think I was 13 when this happened, I'm guessing, which would have made you about 16.
Well, memory is very illusory, but I felt like we were younger, but who knows?
We could have been. Yeah. All I remember, and you can tell me if you remember it differently, because it was a very long time ago, but her grandmother always told ghost stories, and she would tell stories. I don't know if you remember the one about when she was a kid, they would look out the window and see a lady dancing around the trees and
yes,
different things like that. So she was always kind of raised. I don't think Shane did either, got to meet her mom, our great grandma, but that type of thing was talked about a lot, and it was believed in. And from what I remember, our grandparents had built, our granddad actually, we called him Bop Bop, and he had built this called the barn, this huge massive building to house their fifth wheel in. They had originally lived on an old farm down in around Woodruff in Ennery, South Carolina. So, well, actually technically Cross Anchor. They eventually bought this house on Lake Greenwood and fixed it up. It was, you can't even tell what it used to look like now. My granddad did amazing work. He decided that he wanted a building to house this fifth wheel in. And what that is, it's like a camper that you attach to a truck and pull behind, like an RV, but basically that you don't drive. And he decided, and I remember this, I can't remember if you were down there when this was going on and he was building it, but I remember that when he decided to do this, and this amazed me because he did the same thing with your dad and your mom and dad's house. He would just get in his head what he wanted to build. He would go and the materials that he needed and he would build it. I don't think they used
to. He would do the math on the wood. He would take the 2x4s cuttings, and you would find them because he built my parents' house when I was 7, and the house I grew up in. And yeah, we would find the. I think my mom kept one of the old pieces of scrap wood that he would do all the math on in his head, and he would write it out sometimes.
He was brilliant in that way.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
Our grandfather has since passed not too long ago, and a little over a year ago, if I'm remembering correctly. But he was brilliant in that way. And if you met the man, he was just a salt of the earth, give you the shirt off his back, just old Southern type gentleman. He was a Purple Heart recipient in the Korean War and in the Army. And
well, I consider it, he may have not have been college educated, but I consider him the most intelligent man I knew, because he was a voracious reader, and he not only yes. read books, but he read the newspaper from cover to cover every day.
Sometimes more than once.
Yeah, and he just remembered anything he read, and you could just have conversations with him on a variety of subjects, from baseball to history to anything, and he could talk to anybody, and he never met a stranger. So
And I agree totally with everything you just said. Not college-educated, but I too have always thought that as far as people I know very well and personally, especially related to, he's probably the most brilliant man I've ever heard or been around. And yeah, he would just do this.
Mike, this is going not a little bit off topic. Well, not off topic. The house on the lake there. Am I imagining this, or did you hear that they got it from somebody else? It wasn't a house they built. But
I know what you're about to say, but go ahead.
Did you hear? I mean, yeah, that someone died in that house. That there was a drive-by shooting of some kind, or something like that. Or did they just tell us that as kids to scare us?
Now, here's the thing with that. I remember exactly what you're saying, the same way you're remembering it. But whether or not it truly happened, and I ask our grandfather from time to time, because again, he was real big on history. And before I forget, Shane mentioned baseball. Talking about this man, the man knew every statistic of any player just about that you could ever mention, currently playing, in the past, whatever, remembered like their RBIs and everything. I mean, just insane. Shane's way more into baseball than I was, so they shared that bond there. But just hearing him talk about that stuff was amazing. But going back to that, yeah, I had heard the same thing. And basically, the way I remember it's house, the Shetleys owned the lake house at that time. And it was very run down. The house itself had like a lot of the outer walls were like cinder block that had been painted yellow. And the house was not really in shambles, but it hadn't been very well kept up. There was no front porch that was screened in like there is now. There was no pier, which I love to tell this story. Our grandparents have the longest pier on Lake Greenwood because he built it and it's grandfathered in before they put limits on it. So we actually have the longest pier and used to have a, like you would see at a swimming pool in someone's yard, a water slide. Do you remember that?
The diving board is still there though.
The diving board is definitely still there. I get a little leery when I'm there about bouncing on it too much at this point because that diving board has been there for kids. But,
I think somebody's going to break it off in the lake.
It's going to happen. Yeah. So they bought this house and they renovated it. My granddad did his magic on it, added a nice porch and put some wood siding on it and made it look really wonderful and nice. And but yeah, I'd heard the same story basically before the Shetleys even owned it way back when, maybe when we were even very, very young. This man that owned it and lived there was not a very well-liked man in the community. And had angered a lot of people from what I remember, and I may be wrong, but from what I remember, he had stolen from people. And I guess from what we were told, he pissed off the wrong person one time and somebody drove by and shot up the house and killed the guy. It was
so hence doing seances on the property kind of lend it a little bit more gravity, like somebody might have died on these grounds, you know.
It really did. And I, now I never saw this because it was, I don't remember, I was still pretty young when Bob was renovating and things, but apparently when they first got it, you could actually see bullet holes in some of the cinder block walls on the outside of the house. If that's true or not, I don't know, but yeah, apparently a man had been killed there. Yeah, so that I do believe that the house where our grandparents have lived and our grandmother still is somewhat haunted. I mean, hell, the lake room, me and you were both scared shitless of that. Do you remember that picture?
Well, it was there was a portrait of a Native American woman in there, and just this one of those kind of things like you see in the Scooby-Doo cartoons, like the eyes would follow you around the room. So, yeah, we didn't like to sleep in there or even go in there very often.
Even now, as an adult, when I go into that room, it still feels odd. I don't know if maybe that was where the guy died, if that is true, what happened or what, but it does have a different feeling than the entire rest of the house, in my opinion. And that picture, yeah, I mean, I've seen lots of pictures of Native American and Indigenous peoples, but that's the only one that I recall seeing that seemed really creepy and spooky. So yeah, not a big fan of that room.
Thanks a lot for bringing that up. It's gonna be a nightmare tonight. That face is in my head now. Oh my god,
it'll probably happen.
Much appreciated.
So that to get. Wow,
great job.
But yeah, so basically kind of leading up to, there is some activity in my opinion on that property and in that residence. And granted, even though our grandfather went and, like we were talking about, just kind of out of his head, built this massive barn. And I'll try to get a picture. I've got one somewhere and post up so you guys can see how big this structure is. But he just threw this structure up, him and there's some Mennonite communities nearby. And he had a couple of those guys help him out. They're really good with chip and carpentry. And he just kind of organized the whole thing and built this massive structure that turned into
probably in a couple weekends. I mean, let's just do this.
It was quick. I do remember that. But yeah, I mean, he was just like that. He was a brilliant man. And granted, even though that's a new structure, it was still on the property. And it kind of turned into a house for the fifth wheel, which they eventually ended up selling. And then it just became kind of, he had his little workshop area. And now it's just massive amounts of stuff that's stored in there. Lots of stuff, country. And I think your old Clemson locker is in there, if I recall correctly.
I believe
the orange locker that you had, you know, and we won't fault Shane for being a Clemson Tiger fan.
Go Tigers, number one team in college football. Yeah.
They are. I'll give you that. They
Trevor Lawrence for Heisman.
They've been kicking ass. And I'm a South Carolina Gamecock fan, so we've grown up kind of being somewhat rivals. But one of my...
I do recall that you went to the Gator
Bowl. Dude, I was about to say that. Get out of my head.
Yeah, in Jacksonville, Florida against West Virginia, and Clemson won. So, and I think you were pretty excited.
Yeah, me, you, and your dad, if I recall correctly, went to that. And that was one of the best experiences I've ever had at a college football game. I still remember that to this day, and it's one of my fondest memories. So, yeah. But, yeah, so basically kind of how I remember it, Shane, and you kind of – tell me if you remember it a little differently, but I remember that we kind of picked up on the fact that we picked up on the fact our grandma and my aunt and Shane's aunt, because our grandma has three kids, grandma and Kathy and Debbie would kind of go up into the little morning room, as we called it, where people would have coffee and stuff, and they'd start sipping their wine and, you know, telling stories, and they would just disappear outside and at night. Even. And so I think it must have hit a point where Shane and I were just kind of like, being the oldest grandkids, because they would flat out tell us, you know, you guys stay inside, we'll be back later, and probably to keep us from getting scared. But we snuck out, being the oldest grandkids and curious as we were. And the way I remember it is we kind of there's not many, but there are some windows on this building. And there's one window right beside the steps that go into the door inside. And the way I recall it is we were kind of peeking in though and saw what they were doing.
Dun, dun, dun. Yep, they were doing
a
seance.
Yeah. And so as young kids who at that time, I mean, we had heard ghost stories and things like that, but we saw the three of them sitting around this cardboard table and, you know, their hands on the table and a candle lit and all the lights were off. And I remember from perspective kind of being like, what the fuck are they doing? You know, I mean, it looked weird, but at that age, I didn't really know what they were doing. So I didn't think it was anything supernatural or occulty. But yeah, we did that, if I remember correctly, two or three times before they actually caught us.
Yeah, they caught us eventually, or saw us through, or heard us, or we made a noise or something. But I seem to recall, you know, and I was a few years older, kind of knowing what they were doing and knowing that that was something that was supernatural, that wasn't common occurrence for people to be doing. I'd probably seen it in some movies because I grew up watching HBO and Cinemax.
Probably.
Watching movies on there late at night. Yeah, so I'm sure I'd seen some movies with seances in them. And so I kind of had a general idea about what was going on, but didn't quite understand like you.
Yeah, and that's probably true. Shane is older. He's an old bastard, but no, I'm kidding. But yeah, I kind of
watch it.
I recall it the same way. And I think, I don't remember exactly how, but they did kind of hear us or see us or whatever. So at some point, and my memory's a little fuzzy on this. I don't remember if...
I think we begged. I begged. Let them let us do
that's,
it with
that's kind of what I remember, is that we were interested in what they were doing and we wanted to kind of see what it was. And so I remember they let us come in. I don't remember if it was that exact moment when we got caught or if it was the next time, but they brought us in and told us that we could watch. Because when they did seances, as a lot of people typically do, they would be sitting around this square cardboard table and they would pop open for the spin to. And
the candle on the table, I think, served as I remember grandmother saying it was like when you would see the candle flicker, you know that the spirits are coming.
Exactly.
In. And this barn was not the drafty barn we're talking about. Like, it was a newer structure, like Mike said. And, you know, the doors were all there's only one door actually into the thing and one garage door that was always closed. No windows were open. There was no air conditioner, fans going on. So, I mean, there's no reason that the candle should have flickered at all. In this room.
No.
It wasn't drafty or anything like that, but the thing flickered, I'm telling you. I mean, that's the first thing I remember recalling, is the candle would just move back and forth pretty violently.
And the way I recall grandma always doing this, and I don't know if you did, I can't remember, but I know I did a couple other times with her after that, when I would be there, weren't, or whatever else. But yeah, she would start out by asking seen any spirit that might be there to come and sit, and if they would allow them to talk or something like that. And they would all put their hands, both hands on the table, and touch fingertips. And the way I remember it is they would just continue to slowly say, "Table rise, table rise."
Right.
And me and Shane, there's a cement floor, and very smooth, kind of like a garage cement floor in this building. Keep in mind, it's a cardboard table. It's not exactly heavy. I do, however, Shane will know, a dining room table in this house is an antique dining room table. Very solid wood. Heavy as fuck. Yes. And I remember seeing it happen one time, not off the ground as much as cardboard table was, but I remember seeing it kind of lift up and things like that. But we're watching, and I remember seeing the table kind of come off the ground. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was levitating. And I still, you know, at my age now, I mean, I remember us looking, you know, looking at their hands to see if they're putting pressure on the table, and they weren't. They're just fingertips were touching each other delicately, and just knowing that it was happening. But I still question, like, really, what was the trick? You know, there had to be some trick.
I remember 80% like of my mind, a rope or some kind of string, or if they was messing with us, because you know, like you said, we'd get on the ground and like look under, and you know,
I'm pretty convinced it happened. And I believe in ghosts and things like that, but I can be skeptical. You know, I can be scientific minded and think like that, but I'm pretty convinced.
Yeah.
And there's no explanation for it that you can.
There's really not. And if you've ever seen a seance, even hearing us talk about this, it may sound a little far-fetched and outlandish, but as Shane pointed out, I mean, when we looked, you know, their feet were on the ground, their legs weren't touching underneath table. I remember this table coming easily 2 to 3 inches off ground, all four legs.
But they would ask us. Ask a series of yes, no questions. And I mean, there were some interesting things going on there. I mean, you're limited being able to only ask yes, no questions, but they still were able to find out some things about the visitors that they had. And do you remember the story they told of when your dad, my mom, and our aunt were younger and they used to do this, and he was a skeptic and he was not believing that it was going on. And they claimed that the table moved and chased him into the corner of the room. Am I mad at the story? I think I remember hearing the story. It sounds like something that your dad would sit there and say, "This is baloney. This is not real." And you know, obviously the spirits didn't like that. And
I do remember that. that's what first got me interested in that sort of thing. And me and Shane, much like he was saying, from my memory, if serves correct, were much like my father. We're in there and we've noticed that there's nothing going on under the table. We've noticed that there's nothing suspending the table, and we couldn't really figure it out. And from what I remember, we started kind of doing the same.
I was probably a little bit more scared, to be honest with you, more so than poking fun. But also part of me was like wanting, I want to do this. You know, I want to be a part of this. I want to try it out, because these were people that we loved and respected. And if they were okay doing this and finding something interesting out of it, then I wanted to be a part of it as well.
Yeah. And I kind of had the same feeling. Eventually, long story short, guys, the way I recall it is whether it was
well definitely some questioning going on there. I didn't quite,
and I don't think I did either at that point. But what I remember is we were, and I can't be 100% accurate, but I would guess we were probably easily, what would you say, like 8 to 10 feet away from them? Yeah, something like that, give or take. And after a certain amount of time of questioning or kind of not really believing in it, this table shot across the floor towards me and Shane. It shot right over to us. And keep in mind, we're saying we're like 8 to 10 feet away, at least. This table that had once been floating off of the ground, all four legs, suddenly shoots across the room at you. I'm fairly certain I shit my pants. It was a very frightening experience.
Yeah, I can smell it.
I'm not talking about that part, you ass. No.
Oh, I'm sorry. It definitely moved in our direction.
And
for sure.
And I remember from that point on, there was no question in my mind. I still didn't understand entirely how it worked or what was causing it. But at that point, when a table's floating and suddenly comes across the room towards you on its own, that'll make a believer out of anybody. And since then, I've had a fascination with seances. And actually, I don't know if Shane knows this, years, but I've recently started with some other witches in the area that I'm friends with, a seance club, and we're going to be meeting about once a month in different locations and doing seances. But the way that I recall them interacting was it's floating off the ground, and they would ask, like Shane said, yes or no questions, and it would kind of tap down on the floor. Is that what you remember?
That's okay. The way I remember it, yes.
And so they would ask these questions, and so, you know, this floating table would kind of tap down and then float back up really quickly for yes, and do it in rapid succession and back up for no. And it's an amazing thing to watch. If you ever have a chance to dance, I would highly recommend it. Most of my listeners are obviously into the same things I am. So a lot of people that I talk to are a little bit scared of Ouija boards or spirit boards, as some people call them. And I am too. I've had some pretty...
Yeah, I am too. In college, we decided to be stupid and go into St. Philip's Church graveyard downtown Charleston and took a Ouija board. It wasn't mine, but it was one of my roommates, and I wouldn't want to do that.
I remember doing it in an apartment one, and then we'll kind of cut the seance part short so we talk a few minutes about comics. But I remember one time in an apartment in Spartanburg, South Carolina that we lived in. At the time, my dad was with in a relationship with this woman named Charlotte, and her daughter Heather lived with us. They weren't married, but we all lived in the same apartment, and she and I got a Ouija board at the store. And I remember thinking, okay, a company that makes board games makes this, so it can't be that bad, you know, it's got to be just for fun, even though I'd seen a seance,
right? The Monopoly, how bad,
exactly, you know, right? And we're playing around with it, and we're doing, you know, kind of what it said, and no clue what we're doing, but we're doing it. And this planchette is what they're called, that you rest your fingers on, doing this figure eight in rapid succession. And I've later learned in my studies in the craft and the occult that that's not a good sign. If you're using a spirit board and it starts doing that, you have not contacted something savory. And I remember it doing this, and we're both kind of, because starting out, we're both like, oh, you're moving it. But then we're both looking at each other like, holy shit, neither one of us are doing this. And planchette immediately kind of shot off the board across the room. I took that spirit board and I tossed it in a dumpster of the apartment complex.
Yeah, that's time. That's time when you stop playing Jumanji. Yeah. Put Jumanji board up, and it's time.
When the animals come into the real world after you. And I remember throwing it away. But the weird thing, Shane, in the vain stories, is that this apartment, shortly thereafter, I remember Charlotte, myself, and her daughter were in the living room watching TV. My dad was playing music one weekend, and I don't know how to sounded almost like a glass that you would drink out of, rolling across the counter and then falling and shattering on the floor in the kitchen. And I remember Charlotte looked at me and she's like, go see what that was. Something just broke. And I remember going in the kitchen. There's no glass anywhere. And so that was a little, especially right after that had just happened with the spirit board. And then shortly thereafter, weird things started happening. The TV, you know, we would be in bed. The TV would just cut on. We'd go cut it off. Short time later, come back on. It got to where we had to start unplugging the TV. Everybody kind of, the adults dismissed it as, oh, it's some kind of technical electronic thing. So we would unplug the TV if we weren't using it. And then one night I remember, my dad was even home then, and we're all in the living room, or we were eating dinner or something. And most people know what the sound of a bathtub filling up sounds like. And we heard that sound coming from the bathroom. There was only the hallway bathroom, and then there was one in the master bedroom, but this was coming from the hallway bathroom. And I remember my dad telling me, you know, water on, go turn that off. That's wasteful. I walk in and the bathtub's bone dry. I mean,
please tell me it wasn't the bathroom scene from The Shining. You didn't realize that, did you? Okay.
I've never thought about that with that story, but okay. Really? But now I'm going to have nightmares. So.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't know what's worse, that or the twins in the hallway, you know, so.
It wasn't the old wrinkly lady from The Shining coming out of the bathtub, thank God. But but it was bone dry, and even my dad went in and inspected it, and it must have spooked him too. And keep in mind, he grew up around my grandma, who, so I think secretly, even though he played it off, he was a little freaked out. And so the next day, he went to the apartment complex office and was like, look, you know, something's wrong with the electrical in this apartment. The TV does this, you know, bathtub, you know, we heard sounds. And I remember sitting in the office with him as he's talking to the manager of this place, and her eyes got really big. I mean, almost went white. And she then proceeded to tell my father that a gentleman had lived there and had been in the bathtub and had a heart attack and died.
Okay.
And yeah, and we did. No shit. We really did. It must have freaked my dad out enough that we ended up getting a different apartment in the same complex and moved out, because it was just creepy. And I don't know if maybe I kind of think the spirit board must have awakened the guy's spirit, or if it just drew in something negative. I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if people, because that apartment, Foxfire Apartments in Spartanburg. But
so if you live in Foxfire Apartments, be careful.
Yeah, and you hear weird noises like the bathtub, you're in a haunted apartment. Get the fuck out. But yeah, so yeah, so that's our seance story with our grandma. I've done it since with her and many others, and it's honestly, other than the pendulum, my favorite form of divination and reaching out to the other side, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, so. And she did let us join in later, like you said. I mean, we did it.
Oh yeah,
other times.
And I think you were with me when we did it at the dining room table once.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I, like we say, if you guys,
that thing was it was trying its best to move. I'm telling you,
it really was. And this table, I don't think six able-bodied men could easily move this table. It's a beast. And whoever gets that table is lucky. But yeah, it's a nice piece of antique furniture, but yeah. So that's our freaky ass seance story with our grandma. And what's funny, Shane, is everybody that I talked to about this, or when I mentioned it, teasing it on the episodes prior, people are like, bullshit, your grandma never did that. Oh, but she did.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Our grandma was psychic, too. I remember a story my mom tells all the time, that when she was pregnant with me, she told this story that she went into labor and she went to the Naval Hospital. And my granny, who lived in Union, South Carolina, about, I'd guess, maybe 4.5-5 hours away easily, had already been called. This is before cell phones. This is how old we are. And had already been called, and they were already on their way. And I remember my mom telling me this story, that my grandparents, they tried calling them and couldn't get an answer. And then my grandparents just showed up maybe an hour or two after my other grandparents. And basically my grandma's response was that she had had a dream that Dale, my mom, had gone into labor, and she called and got no answer and assumed it must have been true. And they took off down the road towards Charleston. So, my grandma had, or our grandma had, a lot of things like that that would happen. She would have dreams.
Yeah, I think she communicated with family members who had passed through dreams, or I think she saw them sometimes, Mike. I really do, because she would sometimes catch herself saying things and just conversations we would have with her. You know, she was very close to her sisters and her mother, and I think that she still communicated with them in some way, shape, or form.
I've told Tina numerous times. Tina listens to every episode and has given me a lot of comments and support.
Yeah, big fan of podcasts, and why would I not listen to one of my best friends do a podcast, no matter what?
Well, and
it's great to hear him talk and drop some knowledge on me about a subject that I don't know very much about. As he mentioned, yes, I'm a muggle, but I still have a deep respect for people that have different beliefs and anything that's tied into spirituality and things like that. I mean, we are all humans, and we need to connect with each other in many shapes and forms. So
that is so well said. And honestly, you don't know this because I haven't told you yet, but one of the most heartwarming and motivational and encouraging things, and I've had lots, not being egotistical, but I've had a lot of comments on my voice and, you know, the show that I put out. But Shane made a comment a little while back. He went, yeah, I love hearing you talk. And dude, that meant so much to me that you said that. And I really appreciate your support. I love you. and your wife, Meg, and your two boys, Sato and Shunto, with all my heart. And can't wait to see you guys again soon. And I really appreciate you coming on and dropping some of your knowledge with Japanese lore and culture and everything else.
It was a blast. Let's do it again sometime. We can talk some more movies, ghosts, plants.
Yeah, I think next time maybe we'll hit some plants and some movies and maybe a little smattering of comic references too. But yeah, you've been one of the easier guests to talk to. There's not going to be a whole lot of editing that needs to be done. So I'm going to let you get back to your family, brother, and give my best to each and every one of them and tell them that I send all my love. And as soon as COVID is over, whether it's in Charleston or here in Vermont, we definitely need to.
All right,
brother. I love you.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Had fun. Love you.